The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Sure, she came from a very hardcore Protestant family. Now, her dad especially was very nice, a very friendly man, and very good to me in many respects, but he was also deeply anti-Catholic. He was the first person that I ever met who strongly challenged me and told me, listen, you're a nice kid, I like you, you can continue to come here and see my daughter, but I just got to tell you, you're not a Christian, but I'm baptized. Yeah, but that's man-made. You don't believe in the real Jesus. You are not saved, you're not going to heaven. And rather than getting angry and leaving, I thought, well, if the price of admission to be able to see this girl is I've got to sit down with her dad from time to time and go through these things, I'm willing to do that. And so over the course of that summer, every time I would go to Christie's house, her father would make me sit down in the living room and he would get out his big King James Bible and he would pepper me and grill me with arguments against the Catholic Church.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's my colleague, Patrick Madrid, and he's going to be joining me in a little bit here. He just came out with a new book. That was part of his story. Mackie, I'll put your mic for a quick second because you were sharing with me. It's like an hour presentation, right? Is that what he had? And it was the story of how he became an apologist?
He did a talk at Christendom College on why you should be Catholic. And I'd never heard him tell that story of how he got his start in apologetics. I thought it was really interesting that it started from being interested in a girl.
I like that. See, God uses all sorts of ways to lead us closer to him. I love it. I'm looking forward to talking to him. Patrick will be stopping by here in a little bit. He came out with a new book called Inquisition. And I got to be honest, I first heard the title, I'm like, what the heck are they calling that book Inquisition for? It sounds horrible. So it's confusion over the Inquisition as it is. Why would you call your book Inquisition? And then I saw the cover and it made a lot of sense. It's spelled I-N-Q-U-I-Z, emphasis on the quizition. And it's an interesting book. It was a little bit different than I thought. We'll talk about what's coming up, but it's kind of fun to have in your spiritual libraries, I like to say. Lots of great questions, and you know, I'll just randomly open the book. You know, who's the patron saint of altar boys, right? Lots of these different questions. Which medieval monk is regarded as the inventor of modern musical notation? And then he'll go ahead and he'll give you the answer to that and give you a little write-up so you get to learn your faith, get to learn some great trivia. It's an interesting little read. It's free, and we'll tell you how to get it today. Patrick will come by and give us a little bit of the background on all that. But before I begin today, I just want to thank all of you for joining me today. I want to thank His Excellency Bishop Hebda for joining the Christ Brings Hope banquet last night, Mary Jo Feltel. I want to thank Joel and Heidi Hazard, so many people that I had an opportunity to see yesterday and hang out with. I was actually in Minnesota, and this is a great event. Hopefully we can come to your city one day, too. Where Relevant Radio got together, I was with Timory. Timory's pregnant. She's due in December. I got to see her with her baby bump, and Father Simon was there, and Glenn Leverance, and Paul Sadek, and so many of the Relevant Radio names that were there. Patrick Connolly, so many others were with us at night. So we had a great night. I just want to send a shout out to everyone that was there, everyone that stopped by to say hello. My apologies to those who I couldn't say hello to, but it was a great night. We got together and Timory spoke a little bit on Our Lady's Fiat. Father Simon actually broke down in tears last night. He shared a story. I'll have to share it on the air one day with you regarding the time that he made his mother cry and tied it in, of course, to our sorrowful mother. So some great stuff. I was able to give a brief address. And I got to meet for the first time, believe it or not, Father James Shea, who is a regular on this radio program. So it was good to see him from the University of Mary. Just a wonderful, wonderful turnout. And I got to talk to a lot of people who mentioned how much Relevant has meant to them and what a difference it is. Some great converts, too. A lot of people who've now come into the faith as a result of Relevant Radio. And, you know, I was thinking about it the other day as I was at this event. I said, you know, the more we know about our faith, I think the better off the country is going to be. And I think the problem today is that we have really lost our way as a culture. We've really lost our way as a people of God. You know, we see this exodus out of the church right now. And as a result of it, what happens, right? As a result of it, people begin to go down this path of secularism and materialism. And ultimately, I think a lot of that leads you to atheism. I think that's what ultimately happens. And I do think it is, I do think it's tragic, to be honest with you. I think it's kind of, it's kind of a sad reality that that's what happens. You know, a little bit later in today's show, we're going to talk with a scientist. There's some interesting data coming out regarding the James Webb telescope, and it's challenging some traditionally held theories, such as the Big Bang. Right, a lot of people don't believe, a lot of scientists, and I don't say every scientist, but there are many scientists that say the more they learn about the mysteries of science and physics, space, the more you want to believe in God. But there's a lot who have totally discounted that, and you know many of their names. But I was reading a little bit earlier today an interesting piece in which the author of this particular piece says there was an interesting story that he heard from various people that atheism, this denial of God, this you know, God does not exist, this whole theory, this whole belief, if you will, started to spread more rapidly with the introduction of the street lamp. Isn't that crazy? I know. And I so grabbed my attention. What does the street lamp have to do with the loss of faith in God, right? Well, they claim it began in the early 19th century and started what we know today as light pollution, right? When you look up at the sky, we no longer see the beauty of the stars. You might be lucky to see a few of the really bright ones, depending on what city you live in. If you are in LA or Chicago or Philly or New York or whatever, there's a lot of light pollution there. In fact, I was saying to my wife, Kathy, I said, you know, I saw on television, probably a year and a half ago, there is in the Nevada desert, what they call dark sky. And there's different areas of our nation. Colorado's got this too. And there's certain areas that are designated where light pollution has got to be held to a minimum. And you get the most beautiful view of the night sky. And there's a thing called the star train where you can get on this train, right? And you can go ahead and I forget how many hours it is out. And then I guess they serve you food, and then you camp out that night, or you get ready with these telescopes, and you see this dark sky. You see the sky like you've never seen it. When I was in Haiti a couple years ago, I remember I woke up in the middle of the night. It was like 2 or 3 in the morning, and I couldn't sleep. It was hot, mosquito. You know, we had to sleep with mosquito nets, and I was in a building that had two floors to it, an upper and lower, and I happened to be on the second floor, and it was right there. I could walk out into a patio on the roof of this building. So I just went out there, and I was blown away. And I was in the jungles of Africa, too, where I saw this, where there was no light pollution at all. And the sky looked like somebody took a handful of diamonds, right, and just threw them into the sky, just tossed them into the night sky. It was awesome. The Milky Way, the beauty of creation that our ancestors gazed upon night after night. There are few who ever get to see that. Few who ever get to see that. You know, it's some of the great mystery of God. And I think when you see space, when you see God's creation, it leads you to believe in a bigger being. So back to the streetlight. I don't want to get too divergent here. This man made the case that, you know, atheism began to rapidly spread with, you know, in the early 19th century with the street lamp and with light pollution. He says, when you look up, you know, we don't see these stars anymore. Instead, you're lucky to see a couple of them. And the reason why this is linked to atheism is because even the pagans of old, they looked at the vast array of stars in the sky. And, of course, they thought they were gods, right? They were wrong on that point. But they knew something. They knew that there was something beyond themselves, something bigger than themselves. And they thought that the tiny specks of light they saw were celestial powers that governed the earth. And it's an interesting theory. One, I, you know, maybe we should test out. I mean, drive outside the city limits after nightfall on a clear day and go in the middle of nowhere. Turn off all your lights. Find dark sky country. Take that star train, you know. Go somewhere where you can gaze at that night sky. And if you want to know the best places for it, there are websites out there. You can do a quick search for it online. But I think you'll be amazed at what you see. I don't know what the data is, and I wonder if there's a correlation to greater faith in those areas. I don't know. I don't know. But I could see the diminishment of this, perhaps. It's an interesting theory. It's just a theory at that. Obviously, a lot of scientists who study the sky remain firm in their atheism. However, they do that when they divorce beauty from truth. You know, and that's what happens. You know, this is why when you look at that night sky, you wed beauty and truth together. How can you not see the beauty of God's creation? Huh? How can you not see beauty? How can you not see truth? I'd say a vast majority of people, when taken out to see that type of sight, the reaction is one of awe, wonder, of amazement, you know, rather than just scientific, curiosity. I think it was Saint Augustine who said that beauty, the beauty of creation can have great ability to open the heart of man to believe in his creator. And I think there's so much truth in that, don't you? The beauty of creation can open the heart of man to believe in his creator. I think that's why Satan, today more than ever, is viciously attacking beauty. You know, it's being distorted, it's being mocked, it's being defiled. And there's no question in my mind that there's a spiritual underpinning, an undercurrent to this. So we'll talk about it a little bit later. I don't want to get too far into this. Stephen Meyer will be stopping by. We'll take a look at this whole theory of science and God because, you know, the headlines right now show that Gallup had a headline that belief in God has fallen to 81%, a drop of 10% over the last decade. And it's even lower amongst a younger demographic, 18 to 29. But we'll take a look at... the challenge that science offers. Is James Webb, is that telescope, is that going to redefine what we've always believed about creation and the Big Bang Theory? Will it challenge that particular theory? Will it lead people to maybe a greater belief in God? That's coming up. Plus, there have been UFOs spited over Kyiv. And I'll give you the latest what the Navy has had to say, because I want to take a look at whether or not we're looking at a young universe, you know, with the James Webb telescope as well. Is the universe a lot younger than we thought? There's a lot of people who hold to that theory. Is it possible that the universe is younger than we thought? We'll get into that and a whole lot more. We'll talk angels. But let me bring you up to speed on just a couple quick news stories for you before we kick it off. The Senate Democrats, they've opted to delay a vote on the so-called Respect for Marriage Act until after the midterm elections. They're going to need probably at least 10 Republicans to join them in voting for that. I don't think they were going to get that. If you're not familiar with that, that was a piece of legislation that would codify same-sex marriage protections until after the midterm elections, and they put it all, codify, same-sex protections. They want to put it off after the midterms. Why? They hope that timing might get them those other votes. Right now the GOP has enough support to overcome a filibuster and pass the bill. So the procedural vote on the measure was previously expected on Monday, but we'll see how that all shakes out. There's so much going on in the culture right now. There's a battle, I think, for truth. I think there's a battle for life. I think there's a battle for marriage. And I think all of these things I think we're at a critical moment, both in the country and with this particular election. How it's going to shake out, I don't know. I look at the Pennsylvania race with Fetterman and Oz, and Fetterman's 10 points ahead. Some of these very Democratic states, like Pennsylvania, New York, Chicago, California, the citizens there, they continue to put into office people who want to redefine marriage, who want to continue to enshrine a culture of death in the country. And I just think that it's just a bad formula for the future of this particular country. And I think there's going to be tremendous, 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 consequence for that if we continue to go ahead and to go down this particular path. So I would invite you to be well-informed, to pray, and to vote for the proper candidates. Do your due diligence and see what's happening here. Hey, did you hear about the migrants, too? Just another quick little story. Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida is pushing back against a number of Democrats who are decrying his transportation of these undocumented immigrants, people who are coming across the border. I was shocked that we know we sent him recently, right, to Vice President Kamala Harris's residence at the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. I think that happened Thursday or Wednesday. I forget the date of it. It was just the other day. I think it was yesterday. 100 people were picked up in Eagle Pass, Texas, and they were sent, to Vice President Harris's home, if you will. They're going a step further. Okay, you sent him to D.C. I get it. You're sending a message to those in the nation's capital. But guess where he sent them next? He sent them to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. I couldn't believe it. Yeah. People were not happy about this, of course. Under Trump, Democrats said they were proud to be sanctuary jurisdictions, right? They said how bad it was to have a secure border. Remember, they were saying, oh, Trump's putting people in cages. So DeSantis says, you know what, what I'm sending is just a very small, small fraction of what those border towns have to deal with every day. Some of these towns have only populations of about 25,000 people, and thousands of undocumented people are coming across the border. They believe that Joe Biden has invited them here. You know, they believe that the border's open, that it's free. And you know what? They're kind of right. They're coming across, and what's happening? They're getting shipped to hotels in New York and to so many of these sanctuary cities, but the mayors of those towns, governors of those states, are not happy with these people showing up, and all of a sudden they go berserk. They're very upset that this is ultimately happening. President Biden is pressuring Mexico now to accept migrants from Latin American nations under Title 42, the coronavirus expulsion order that the administration publicly pushed to end. And Reuters noted that public liabilities for Democrats really represented an unprecedented numbers of illegal migrants arriving here on our southern border. So this was a quiet appeal to the Mexican authorities, very quiet appeal. We'll see what happens. I think this is going to come back also to resonate in the elections. Number one issue for the election, though, just to make sure that we're all on the same page with that one. Number one issue is economy, right? The second thing is life. And then these other issues kind of fall in under that as well. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. This is this huge issue because I just heard about a young girl who died in a bathroom from overdosing on fentanyl. It was fentanyl killed her, but it was a drug that was laced with it. And they're coming over in massive numbers. It's almost as though this is a war on the citizens of the U.S. It's undeclared. And China is funneling the cartels with this poison. And then this poison is being mulled over by the Mexican cartels, and then American citizens are dying. And this is really a modern-day tragedy. And my heart goes out to any parent out there who has lost a child as a result of these drug overdoses. It's absolutely, absolutely horrific. Also, one other just intention for prayer. We'll bring this to the chaplain a little bit later. I just saw a story that one of the most powerful storms in decades is set to lash the Alaskan coast. So we'll see what happens. They're expecting torrential rain, enormous waves to hit the Alaskan coast. They're expecting flooding and beach erosion. And, we'll see what happens. The system, it's the remnants of Typhoon Merbok. The forecasters are saying it should be the storm of the decade as it's moving over the Bering Sea right now. And spanning, the northern Pacific and the ocean between Alaska and Russia. You don't often hear a whole lot about that, but I'll put that on your radar as well. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk more. We'll try to catch up with my colleague, Patrick Madrid, came out with a new book. I want to tell you a little bit more about that. And then, of course, one of the things I've been monitoring, weather has a lot to do with this, and so does war, and so does a number of other factors. There are a lot of experts talking about the potential for a coming food catastrophe, right? You probably have already seen how high the cost of food has gone from eggs and milk and your basic supplies. I don't know how true this is, but I saw one expert indicate that ground beef, how ground beef tends to be relatively inexpensive, right? I had seen one report that it could go up to, and I find it even hard to say this, $50 a pound? Come on. Really? I'll tell you about that story. I'll fill you in on a whole lot. We got drought, fertilizer supply shortages, and so much more. Stay with me. We got a lot to get into today. The chaplet's coming up. We'll talk angels, God's creation, and so much more.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at catholicplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
But right now, accessing affordable and nutritious food is becoming more and more difficult around the world. We've found ourselves living in a global food crisis.
Millions upon millions of people, in fact, 345 million people today, are suffering from hunger at a crisis level.
Since early 2022, we at WFP already warned that this would be a year of unprecedented hunger. The pandemic's economic consequences play a huge part in hunger rising to unprecedented levels. At the same time, climate shocks continue to destroy lives, crops, and livelihoods, and undermine people's ability to feed themselves. Meanwhile, conflict keeps waging war on everyday life. As the biggest driver of hunger, currently 60% of the world's hungry live in areas afflicted by violence. In Ukraine, the war has transformed what was the breadbasket of the world into a major humanitarian aid recipient. Before the war began, Ukraine produced enough food to feed 400 million people per year. But when the war started, Ukraine's food exports all but stopped, trapping corn and wheat inside the country.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, boy, that was audio there from the World Food Program from a few days ago, warning of a global food crisis. Now, I don't want to stress you out, and I don't want to bring fear. God is in control of everything. But what I'm about to talk about is quite staggering. It really is. And it's reality. And you know me, right? You know I care about you. I'm in this walk through life with you. We're doing it shoulder to shoulder. We get to spend our days together. And I always try to look down the road and around the bend, as I like to say. I like to see what is coming. I don't want to be blinded by the trees. I want to see the forest. I want the 30,000-foot view. And I mentioned that when I was sharing with you about Obergefell years ago when they overturned and redefined marriage, where that would lead. I've often told you what I think I see coming, even with COVID. When people thought, oh, it's going to be one and done, I knew it was going to take place. I knew we were going to be battling this for a long time, and it erupted into a pandemic. We may very well see a food shortage. And this is serious. I don't know if you remember, on Tuesday, there was news that just rocked the stock market. The government announced, contrary to expectations, that inflation rose 8.3%. And they had expected a lower number. The news sent shock waves through the market. It had plummeted. The Dow lost 1,200 points, and now NASDAQ and the S&P 500 lost, I think, more than 4%. Wednesday and Thursday, there was an attempt at stability, but today brought more bad news, this time from the private sector. FedEx announced that it has experienced a large downturn in demand for its services, especially in Asia and Europe. And because of that, the company's going to reduce flights. They're going to temporarily ground aircraft. They're going to cut staff, some of their hours, and then they're going to close 90 FedEx office locations in response to its financial woes. So that's not great news. They also plan to cut about $500 million from their capital expenditure budget for the fiscal year, which ends in May. So that news sent the stock for FedEx down about 22%. It also sent the markets in a further tailspin. The last I checked, and I've had a really busy day today, all three major indices were down more than 1%. Of course, it didn't help that FedEx CEO, he said he's expecting a global downturn in the economy and maybe even a recession. But a company like FedEx, you know, is it a canary in the coal mine? Is it a canary in the coal mine for the economy? You know, should we be looking at it and saying, hey, what do they know? What are they doing? What are we seeing? What's coming? Because when people stop sending packages, that means they're not buying as much, right? or business is down. We did just miss an economic disaster after that rail freight was averted at the very last minute. If that had gone ahead, oh my gosh, that would have been, I think, monumental. It would have pushed us, I think, without question, into a recession, and maybe even a lot sooner. But it may just be, I don't know, delaying the inevitable. You know, I'd sometimes joke that after speaking with our next guest who's going to join me today, and we'll talk about this and the food shortages and so much more, I said to him, I said, you know, when I'm done hearing, when listening to you, I said, I want to go home. I want to drink a glass of hemlock because of your outlook on the future. It's negative. It's dark. And, you know, where's the hope in all of that? Most of his peers were complete opposite beliefs, and they have these bullish forecasts. Oh, this is temporary. We're going to be through this. Things are going to be better. And look, you know, everything is cyclical. Things rise and fall. But I'll tell you, my next guest has been pretty accurate in his assessment. And I kid him about drinking the hemlock, of course, but bottom line is that Peter Grandage told us last fall. Remember that? And I like this because like what I just said, you know, I like to look ahead, see what's coming. Last fall, Peter said it was his opinion that all stocks and bonds should be sold by year's end. And he did that because his belief at the time was that America had entered the worst economic, worst social, worst political era. And in his words, he says we should be live chickens versus dead ducks. And he was, you know, he wasn't alone, but he was relatively alone. Most other people didn't think that was going to be the case. Peter warned. He said, this is what I see coming. And he often says, like, I don't have a crystal ball, Drew. But, you know, here's what I see. Here's what the winds are telling me. Here's how I'm reading them. Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with Peter, his life story. He chronicled in a book called Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid, and you should check it out. It's a good read. It tells you the story of a man who made millions of dollars and lost them, not once but twice, right? He battled with severe panic attacks, anxiety, depression, had a great conversion to the Catholic faith, and he's embraced our faith, and now he wears it on his sleeve, right, both at work and at home. And, of course, he would probably prefer to talk about the faith and finances with me, but he's brilliant at mixing the two. And he joins me today to give us his assessment on this coming food shortage and all that's now unfolding in the economy and how it will affect you and your bottom line in the days ahead. Peter, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. And on a very serious note, ironically, tomorrow my wife and I, we're hosting a charity event that's helping to food pantries, and both food pantries have seen anywhere from a 5 to 10 times increase in not only the number of people coming, but how many more working class people. Normally, you know, the people that were down on their luck or struggling was the typical, but now they said almost half of the clientele coming are people that are working or were working or got laid off or whatever, and just literally can't get by now. So it's not something that's, when we turn on the TV and look to another continent and go, yeah, it's right here in our backyard. So you made a very good point. And I can also say I'm glad you never drank the hemlock, but it's not bad news is not something sells in this business. And if I may, yeah, I just tell you how I learned that. You know, I go back almost 40 years in this business. I was a guy that never started out to be in the business, but took any schooling for it. And early in my career, in 1987, I made a forecast of a crash. And, you know, people said there's not going to be no crash. And then the day after that crash, I said that everything's going to be hunky-dory. But when I originally put out the original warning about it, the firm I was working for at the time, and I was only in the business 3 years, wanted me to retract it or resign. And the chairman made a very good point, and at that point I learned early on that Wall Street is far more of a sales organization than an advisory service, because he said to me, Pete, listen, 90% of our clients are not going to sell everything like you said back then, just like I said last year. And if you're wrong, which we think you're going to be, they're never going to listen to you again. So we can't have that. And if you're right and this terrible thing comes, they're not going to be in a position to take advantage when you tell them to go in. Now, the 10% that end up listening to you, probably half of them are going to be too petrified to buy when you tell them to go back in, even though you got them out correct. And the last line was the most important. The chairman of this New York Stock Exchange firm said to me, we can't stay in business where only 5% of our clients benefit from our advice. So please retract this or resign. I didn't, and that's how it all got started, this high school dropout called the crash. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, basically the same thing happened again from last year. Most people didn't listen. Most people didn't want to listen. And the net result of it now is, after the worst bond market in 40 years, one of the worst equity markets in a long time, I have not seen anything from an economic standpoint that would benefit that advice. But from knowing, and as you know, how I believe that I'm here more to speak about how faith and finance come together than trying to forecast markets, from that standpoint, there's been a huge benefit. So there's a lot of difficulties here. One of the other difficulties, a lot of people don't want to hear it. Most of the people giving advice right now have only been in the business less than 20 years.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of them have only been in since the last financial crisis. So they basically learn to drive on a one-way street. Doesn't mean they're dishonest. Doesn't mean they're not good people. But they don't know or have no real experience. And everybody goes, hey, it's been a bull market for 40 years. It's correct. But before that, it was a bear market for 27 years. In the early 1980s, it was so bad on Wall Street that Business Week ran a famous magazine front cover that said equities were dead. People didn't think, listen, the Dow only went between 700 and 1,000 for 25 years in a row. Wow. So when a guy came out of Georgia named Robert Prechter talked about 3,700 on the Dow, they thought he was crazy. Well, we've seen the opposite through last year. We saw a lot of people, in a sense, caught up in what you and I have discussed so often, the greatest, I called it the greatest financial bubble of all time, that it just keeps going. It's like a dice game at the casino that doesn't have a seven in it. So the game just can keep going and going and going. And unfortunately, a lot of people got caught up in that. And one of the reasons, again, going back to professional advice, 80% of money managers, according to several Nobel laureate studies, underperform an index fund. So people would have been simply better off putting their money in an index fund than handling it to a typical money manager. So we have a lot of issues just in the group of people responsible for the game, let alone the various fundamental things that you've spoken about, that, as I told you, that seemed like a near-perfect storm of economic, social, and political woes all coming together to get us to where we are right now.
It's funny. I often think about what you say about these people who have been in the industry less than 20 years. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I had a friend whose son I knew, right? And this guy changed his career. I think he was coaching at like the YMCA or something and decided to go into financial planning. And I suddenly handling people's money. And I'm thinking, he only had like a month or a couple of weeks of training. And next thing you know, he's dealing with their finances. And I'm thinking, that's kind of frightening. In some respects, I won't say the organization, and maybe not everybody does it that way, but you really do trust the people that you deal with, you know, in a situation like that. You, the long view, I think that's kind of important. Yeah, what do you see coming? They're talking about everything from food shortages to, you know, the market having volatility. In fact, I saw something I think you put up today, Peter. It said the real estate bubble's burst and more blood is to come. What's happening in real estate as well? Because that was on fire. I mean, you couldn't get a house last year. Now interest rates, the Fed's probably going to raise them another 75 basis points. What do you see coming in the not-too-distant future in housing? And we can break down some of the other areas as well.
Okay, so stop pouring the hemlock, and I'll continue. But let me just add one other point, which I think is very important, and I'll definitely answer in detail if you like what you just asked me. You remember when the cryptocurrencies came out and everything was going crazy? And I really didn't comment until this Bitcoin got to about 65,000. And then I just came out of left. I said, this thing's insane. We have 21-year-old, 23-year-old men and women peering on financial networks, internet gurus, telling us this is the greatest thing that ever happened and the markets are going to go through the roof. And realistically, and I said back then, and I'll say it again, their only difficulty that they ever had in life up until that was in algebra just a few years ago in high school. And that ties into that, what I'm concerned about of not real experience. You know, most people would not want to hire a doctor that just started practicing that versus one that's done it for 20 or 30 years and had multiple surgeries. Same thing with a lawyer. You'd rather hire somebody more likely that's gone through 300 trials than just three or four. And that's unfortunately the negative. That doesn't mean that every single person who's young isn't qualified or anything. It's just something to keep in the back of the mind. So I don't want anybody to feel like that's just across the board if they're, you know, certain age and all, don't deal with them. But remember, you're not getting a discount because they're bringing less experience to the table. Yeah. So now to answer your questions. Yeah. Yep. First of all, on the real estate was the one that I spoke about would be the last thing that would break in this all-time financial bubble, and it's breaking. Today, what I noted, and it wasn't me, I used a post from someone else, they noted that just in 2 years, because of mortgage rates where they were 2 years ago and now, and all other expenses, it is so much more difficult to go out and buy a home right now. And that's what's causing this bubble that was aided by institutions buying homes, not just people buying homes for the sake of dwelling, really was the last thing that needed to happen to really break that down. And once it turns, and if you talk to most realtors in most areas of the country now, are reporting not only a drop in interest, but people's willingness to buy has dropped, but sellers are now willing to go lower, something that was just unheard of 6 months ago. People were paying above the ask price. And that all ties into this whole notion that you and I talked about for quite some time, and that was that, you know, we basically had monetary heroin pushing us forward by creating trillions of dollars. No one wanted to understand. You and I had the discussion since I think the first days we talked to several years ago that debt doesn't have one positive verse in the entire Bible. And to me, the Bible is the only real financial manual anybody should listen to. And most people don't know, whether they're Catholic or Protestant, that the Bible has more taught verses about matters of finance than it does even heaven or hell. So the Almighty God, if you believe in him, felt that it was so critical to understand money from a godly manner and is so negative about debt, yet here we are, just in the span of the last couple of years, we issued more debt as a country than we did in our first 225 years combined. And no one thinks that somehow you don't have to pay a price for that. You do. And that's part of the reason why we are where we are now, that the Fed is trying to, in a sense, try to correct many of the mistakes that they made over the last several years.
My guest today is Peter Grandage. If you want to join us, I'll tell you, I'm going to take a short break. Come right back. We'll take your calls. You can get in now. Here's the number. It's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We'll pray the chapel in about 15, 20 minutes, too. So be sure to get queued up for that in a little bit. But right now, we'll take your calls for Peter. And when we come back, we'll take a look at what happened to the stock market. It was down 1,200 points. Still seems to be troubled water. And then the coming food shortage. Is that overhyped or is that a coming reality? We'll get Peter's take on that and more.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Connected.
Connected.
Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
What we don't want for sure is that today's affordability crisis turns into or becomes tomorrow's availability crisis. What I mean by that is that today, if you have money, you can buy food. But if you don't sort out a few things right now, tomorrow, even if you have money, it won't be enough to buy food. What are those things to sort out? We need to make sure that the next agricultural season is a good one. That requires agricultural inputs, especially fertilizer. And if that doesn't happen, our affordability crisis, which is bad enough as we can see around the world, turns into an availability crisis, meaning that food will be even less affordable for millions upon millions of people around the world.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining me, taking a look at the possible coming food shortage. And just to put this on your radar, then I'll jump into a few phones, but I do want to get Peter's take on this. I'm joined, by the way, by Peter Grandage. And if you want to tap into his expertise, Here's his website. It's petergranich.com, petergranich.com. Check out his book, Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid. Another good read. I enjoy Peter. He joins me maybe once every 2 weeks here, maybe first, third week of the month. So you can mark your calendar for that. I've been monitoring this. I don't know how much truth there is to it, but across the world right now, experts, analysts, they're beginning to warn of the fact that food prices are going to skyrocket, that we are on the verge of a catastrophic food shortage. In May, just a couple months ago, the UN, their chief there, said that the world is facing what they believe is potentially years of famine. And you can blame this on the global food shortage being a result of climate change. That's debatable. The pandemic, the Russia-Ukraine conflict. There are other factors that, of course, are contributing to bringing the food system to a breaking point. There's been crop failures. There's been low yields. There's been the halt of food exports, right? Fertilizer, fuel, energy shortages, all of this stuff is worsening what is already a strained food supply. So what looms in the future? What are we going to see? There's so much to talk about. Some of the stats I've seen, I won't even go through because they're almost unbelievable if they are indeed true. Peter, I'd love to have your take on this. You know, it's amazing, you know, what these experts are saying. I don't know how far off this is. I saw one stat from the World Food Program. It said 828 million people around the world go to bed hungry every night. That's unbelievably tragic. 828 million people. So if things worsen, that number is going to go through the roof. What do you see coming? And give me your take on the factors that might be playing into this.
Well, I think all the factors you mentioned are valid. I think it's very peculiar also that the biggest buyer of U.S. farmland in the most recent times has been both Bill Gates, for what I think he'd have enough money, why he's decided to become one of the biggest farm owners is something we should think about, and the Chinese, to the point where locals in the areas where Chinese have bought farms are really calling for at least preventing that to happen more. Why would the Chinese want to own farmland in America? I mean, right. You know, you really got to make yourself think. And so, unfortunately, everything that you discussed in those videos you noted are. Now, I look at commodities, but I'm not an agricultural guy. I don't spend much time on it. But I can tell you that the people that I do know spend time on it really say this is a real important thing. And don't think now that this is going to happen in some poor continent just like in Africa.
Right.
Here in the United States, and again, going back to what played a part of my role of becoming so bearish, is almost two-thirds of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. So think about that. They just were getting by. Well, we all know, no matter what the government tried to have told us, you and I were discussing this before the numbers started to show up, that inflation was a lot higher than the government was reporting. Well, now there are so many people who have seen 10, 20, 30% increases across the board for 1 or 2 years, and their wages stayed flat. So think about that. If they were just getting by, how are they now going to go? That's why the food pantries and all are witnessing such, you know, we're watching people wait on in a car for 6 hours to get a basket of food. So it's a real legitimate thing. But you also said something earlier. We're not to get petrified over it. That's it's not right. Like God is up and going, what do you mean this is happening? I didn't know anything about that. For whatever reason, and it's history has shown us, we've had famines before, and many times in history, and I'm not here to talk about the end of the world or God's punishment or anything like that, but famines have been allowed for whatever reason in God's mind, because sometimes that was the only way to get people's attention. And I know one thing. I know places like Europe are in for a very tough time. They are not going to have enough energy to get through a normal winter. And here in the U.S., there, you know, some areas that may face that as well. And, of course, I think that's going to help lead to, because it played a big role in the food because of fertilizing, probably a forced, hopefully, some sort of ending that can end the Ukrainian war. So Ukraine can become an exporter again. That piece you ran earlier is so much true. They're such a big player on certain types of food, and especially fertilizer. So these are all issues. We haven't talked about the political stuff that's coming, the infighting, the social aspect, and, of course, the most important thing, the economics. We've taken on all this debt. We don't have the ability to service it, and now the Fed can't, people say, oh, they're going to pivot. Well, if they pivot and turn around and go back, then I don't think they ever can again. But even if they did that, then we are just going to have hyperinflation, and we're going to be like the third world countries that we saw in the 70s and 80s. So no matter how you get around it, as much as people don't like to hear it, and trust me, Drew, this doesn't benefit my planning business. People don't like hearing this. In fact, they actually get mad at you. I actually get emails now from people that don't even know me that tell me, well, it's guys like you that are talking things down that's caused this. Okay, I caused it, you know, but that's where people are at this point.
Yeah, I almost feel like we're being gaslit by the administration. You know, the president was asked, and he said, oh, the market's one thing. And it's true. The economy's another. It's only 0.1%. He made some sort of comment like that. You know, things are not good in the economy. The other factor that I'm concerned about, and again, I'll go back to prayer and trust. My whole life is built now, Peter, on trust. I trust God in everything, both personally and societally as well. We're looking at a multi-year mega drought here in the States, one of the worst in 1,200 years. Europe is seeing one of the worst droughts in 500 years. There's 40% of the United States has been suffering from drought for, they say, about 101 consecutive weeks. That's going to affect crops as well and food. We've got a culture that is continuing to move away from God with its with so much of the policy here. We need to, and I think about some of our founding fathers, I even think about Abraham Lincoln calling for days of prayer and penance, you know? I think that's what we need to do as a nation. I think we as a people really need to pray. We need a consecration of this country to the Immaculate Heart. I mean, we really need to approach this spiritually as well. I think that'll help change things in terms of the spiritual dynamic and maybe take the blinders off the eyes of so many people who right now are mired in fear for what's coming. There's a lot of people who are in retirement or getting close to retirement or have big families, and they wonder how they're going to make ends meet. So to your message, we can't be afraid.
Well, I think you have to make a conclusion now, especially when I talk on Relevant Radio, where at least I know versus on some financial network, most of the people listening are trying to, in some way, shape, or form, lead a life taught as Catholic and Christians. You know, so I think that's critical. But you have to sometimes make tough decisions. I had to make, as you know, because by now, at this time of year, you and I would be talking about football. But a couple of years ago, having my most lucrative business I ever had, you know, I dealt with a lot of professional athletes and all, where professional athletes and teams decided to go and how they wanted to invoke wokeism and social and other political factors led me to a point where I had to make a decision. Right. I could either keep making money and kind of play both sides, or I had to stand on principle and what my teachings that our Lord has taught us, and I had to leave a business that was lucrative for that. And I think that's what's hopefully, in the end, things getting tough, God hopes or expects that we are going to finally start to stand up and speak out. People have been very afraid to speak out and say things like that. I did, and it cost me, you know, clientele that left, athletes that didn't want to deal with me, and so forth and so on. But I can tell you one thing. I believe the benefit of that is a more closer relationship and a better understanding. And I think one of the blessings was for God to place in my mind to be on the right side of things in markets and all. So I know it's tough, but I really would call people, it's time we stand on the good teachings of our book and our church.
Yeah. If you missed any of this conversation, when the show's over, feel free to download it, check out the podcast, share it with others. I think it's really important. Peter and his message needs to be heard. Dan is in Providence, Rhode Island. Dan, thanks for waiting. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Amen to what both of you just said. Great show, Drew, and thank you, Peter, as well. Listen, I just wanted to ask you a question as to what you think about precious metals like gold, silver, say more specifically silver. How do you see that in the mix of all this?
Well, if one can speculate, and the word speculate is a replacement Wall Street came up with, so it doesn't really call it what it is, and that's gambling, which you got to be prepared to lose part of all your capital. The metals now are probably at the most attractive vis-a-vis everything else you would look at since I've been in the business. That is where I only have my own personal money. So I would have to tell you, from my greedy little buyer self, I think both silver and gold are I would rather own them right now than I would own. But that doesn't mean all the other listeners run out and sell their stocks and put it all in some gold as all. But if for my choice, I would own silver and gold here before I'd even buy a bond at this point.
All right. Yeah, okay. Thanks, Dan. Good question. Let me go to Alex in Panoma, California. Hi, Alex. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Drew, for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Peter, I got a question. You talk about, like, in the Bible, it talks about finances, matters of finance. Where would I find that? Would that be in your book that you have written?
So on our website, petergranich.com, there's a link that says suggested readings. I have a lot of different booklets that have been written about that. You can read them online. You don't even have to send us your email and so forth and so on. And it will point you to the various different verses where all those matters are related to. And that would be the best way to look at it. And there are a lot of other people that have studied the Bible and talk about Scripture. And all. Not as much, unfortunately, in the Catholic faith as there is right. in the Protestant faith. But I would warn you that the one thing that I talk aggressively against in my book, and that is what's commonly known as Christian prosperity, where God wants you to be a zillionaire and it's okay to do all that type of stuff. That's one thing that I am totally against, and there's a whole chapter in my book about that.
Good stuff, Peter. Hey, Alex, thank you for that call. It's a great question. Lots of calls. Phones are jammed, but Eli, who's in Lexington, I don't have time to take his call, but very quickly, he wants to know if interest rates are going to go higher. Do you think they're going to go higher and higher? What do you think the Fed's going to do?
No one knows for certain. There's always political pressure where they can cave. But one thing I know for certain is I don't think we're going to see 1% or 2% interest rates or inflation again in my lifetime.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm 66. I hope to be 76, Drew. But listen, it's part of the problem. We sent interest rates to a level where the real world was not supporting it, and now we have to pay that price.
Peter, thank you for your time and your expertise. I'm going to have a good glass of wine instead of a glass of hemlock tonight.
All right.
A little bit of hope today. I love it. I look forward to meeting your wife, too. I know I'm going to be seeing her soon on my trip to Israel. Hey, have a great weekend. Enjoy your football, too, Peter. We'll catch up again soon, okay?
Okay. God bless you.
God bless you. It's Peter Granich. The Chaplain is straight ahead.